This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Dr. Stephen Himesfield. Recently, he stepped down as director of the Pennington Biomedical Research Center, but he's still quite active in our community as a professor and chair at the Pennington Center, and we will talk with him about obesity and other matters. Dr. Himesfield is considered to be one of the world's foremost experts on obesity, and there is a new study showing that the obesity rate among preschool-aged children from poor families fell in 19 states. Louisiana, not one of those 19 states. Also on the show, Leo Honeycutt, the biographer of Edwin Washington Edwards, the former four-term governor, turns 86 years old today. You might even hear a word or two from the governor. But first, the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane producing today, and our guest is Dr. Stephen Himesfield. He recently stepped down as the director of the Pennington Biomedical Research Center here in Baton Rouge, recognized throughout the world for its work, particularly in the area where Dr. Himesfield is the man, the person who knows more about obesity, even though he's a lean and mean fighting machine, than any person on the planet, perhaps. Good morning, Dr. Himesfield.
Good morning, Jim.
And if you'd like to talk and join the conversation, we welcome you as always. This man knows what he speaks of. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, and you may reach us by email at inkstershow.org. Now, Dr. Himesfield, story today in the New York Times. Poor children show a decline in obesity rate in 19 states, and an overall trend showing obesity among poor families is going down just a bit. Well, of course, we've got a long ways to go down, but Louisiana, not one of the 19 states.
No. For some reason, Louisiana was not included in that survey that was done between 2008 and 2011.
So potentially we could have been in the 19, but this is a study that included 19 states, didn't include 50 states.
That's right. Okay. So the state signed up for this, and they included mainly poor populations, populations lower income in cities. Previous studies had shown that higher income children had actually experienced the decline in the rate of obesity. And so there was a lot of interest to see what was happening in lower income children.
Is it diet related?
It seems to be diet related. The message is getting out there now that obesity is a problem. The stores and the schools and the playgrounds are all changing their experiences for these children.
Do you ever eat at a McDonald's or a Wendy's or Burger King or one of these
fast
food places?
Well, truth be told, I do once in a while. I enjoy it, but I don't do it regularly.
What do you have?
I eat healthy. I have a wonderful wife who cooks
she's
fresh
not cooking
grown
there,
vegetables.
But when you go there, what do you have?
At McDonald's,
yeah.
I eat a hamburger and I get a shake and all the things that I tell people not to eat on a regular basis.
But a hamburger, just a plain hamburger, and I've had a few of those at McDonald's, that's not so bad, is it?
No, of course, it just depends on how much you eat. There's no reason not to eat a hamburger once in a while, particularly at this time of the year, but you don't want to eat too much of it.
Well, it's certainly more cost-efficient. A McDonald's hamburger still is quite inexpensive. But if you go down the street and go to my favorite place, Louie's, it gets a bit more expensive. And then if you go to one of a steakhouse and have a hamburger, it gets real expensive. So isn't it cost-related to some extent?
Well, to some extent, it's cost-related. Healthier foods tend to cost a little more. But on the other hand, the key thing is to not eat too much and to try and keep your weight in check. So we can all have good times around New Year's, holidays, and so on, as long as we keep the rest of the time in check.
Portion control. And exercise.
That's right.
You do that as well, don't you?
I do.
But there are those who say you can exercise all you want. If you don't eat right, you're going to have some issues.
That's right. The other thing that's not appreciated about exercise is that often you compensate. So if you burn a lot of calories with exercise, sometimes you'll feel hungrier and eat more. So you have to do both. You have to exercise and watch what you're eating.
And in this part of the country, the food is great. And the weather is oppressive at times. So you put those two things together, and we've got a lot of poor people who can't afford to go to Whole Foods and places like that in some cases. So you put all that together, it's a recipe for health problems.
It is. And you're hitting on a very important point, which is if you look at the map of the United States, you'll see that the highest concentration of obesity is in Louisiana, Mississippi, and adjoining states. And that phenomenon is related to poverty, socioeconomic status, education, maybe weather, many things we're trying to understand better.
Well, and in some cases, a listener notes that some of these people who don't have a lot of means, it's somewhat dangerous for them to get out of the house. So, you know, I take walks at midnight, early in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Some areas of town that wouldn't be advisable.
That's right. So the built environment, as it's called, is very important so that we have places. So we have sidewalks. Even in front of Pennington, we're still trying to get a complete sidewalk put in there. And so these are all things that in our modern environment, we have to make safe places to exercise.
297-5633 for Dr. Stephen Himesfield, the George Bray Endowed Chair, the super chair in nutrition, super chair. So we've got Superman. Remember, Norman Mailer wrote of John Kennedy in 1960, Superman comes to the supermarket. Well, this is the Superman of nutrition right here in our community, and he is a man who is somewhat a prophet in his own land. A lot of people don't know who the heck Dr. Stephen Himesfield is, but if you listen to this show, you know who he is. 297-5633, Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on the air with Dr. Himesfield.
Doctor, are you familiar with the people living long lives in Okinawa? Thanks.
In Okinawa. What are they doing in Okinawa?
Well, there are people in Okinawa and other places in the world where they have particularly long lives. The U.S. is not among the nations that have the longest lifespans, and there's a lot of interest in that. So these people, one is that they genetically might be predisposed to longer lives, but also they keep lean, they eat healthier, they have an environment in which they can exercise, and they have families that can support them as they get older.
Well, Japan has one of the highest lifespans in the world,
right? That's right, it does, yes.
And the things that might contribute to that, number one, they tend to be slim. And it's also true, isn't it, that taller people live fewer years on the average than less tall people?
That's true. It's a little controversial, but that is something that's very interesting and important, is this relationship between body size and longevity. And there is some relation with taller stature and shorter lifespans, but it's not a clear one.
But I've also seen studies that the Japanese smoke more than any other culture in the world.
They do smoke more, but if you go over there, you'll see that the food tends to be much healthier than the food we eat. The environment provides ample activity spaces. People can walk. They support each other. So it's a very different lifestyle than we have here.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Dr. Stephen Himesfield. Glenn on River Road. Hi, Glenn. You're on the air.
Yes, just a question. Lifting science a little bit more into society, Dr. Himesfield. Obesity, you know, years ago, there was an argument that the obesity epidemic was kind of almost manufactured in a way, that the data wasn't really showing it to be a true epidemic. And even the government acknowledged several years ago that they had inflated, or there had been inflated numbers released. Taking that into modern research that shows obesity can be caused by a variety of things. And I know there are researchers right there at the Pennington Center that show obesity has multiple different causes. What concerns me is when scientists then take something and elevate it to become advocates, advocating laws to restrict sodas, advocating laws to restrict advertising, when these are really only reaching perhaps part of the epidemic, which may not be an epidemic. So I'm just asking about that whole notion of scientists becoming advocates, because that concerns me a little bit, because it ignores the other voices in the research.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I mean, the most important thing a scientist can do is discover the underlying causes of the obesity epidemic, and I don't think anybody disagrees that now we do have a major public health problem. But there are some places that scientists can contribute and apply their knowledge to the greater public health good. So I think that there are issues such as soda bans in New York and things like that, that scientists take one side or another. But I think what we really know is that very often the data just isn't there to support one side or another. And that's the role of a scientist, is to generate that data.
Now, the last cigarette commercial to run on television, I think, in the United States was New Year's Eve of 1971. It's been a long time. That's an area where the government has controlled advertising, as Glenn Duncan just noted. Is that a good thing, Dr. Himesfield?
Well, to a certain extent, it is. And the cigarette example is often used in relation to the obesity example. And cigarettes are a much easier thing to control and regulate than food. And that has taken two or three decades to bring down the rate of smoking. And smoking rate is still pretty high, too high in the United States.
It looks like it's just kind of going to stay at 20%.
That's right. It's right around 20%. It was much higher in 1960.
Did you ever smoke?
Never smoke, no. But it is a major health problem, and obesity could be brought down, but you can see that it could take a very long time to do that.
297-5633 is your number. Now, Dr. Himesfield, I've read through the years some of your work. I think you once referenced Jimmy Carter, the president, 39th president of the United States. He once said that he was going to make tobacco safe. Now, how can you do that?
How can you make tobacco safe?
Yeah.
You would have to take out all the carcinogens, which would be a challenging job to do.
Well, that was 1976 when he was running for president. We had a different view on tobacco use, somewhat different than we do now. But we've known for a long time that tobacco products are dangerous, and yet we continue to use them.
We do. But likewise, we could make food safe as well, safer. And there's a tremendous amount of science moving in that direction to try and create healthier, less expensive foods that people can eat. And I think if you go fast forward 10 or 20 years, you're going to see a very different type of food in the world as a whole.
Well, and getting back to what Glenn said, I don't think tobacco use is a good thing, but I don't think banning advertising, particularly when it's done in television and not in other realms, that's not fair, is it?
And it's not necessarily fair, but if you look at the studies of food advertising, particularly in children, you see it's really overwhelming and excessive. And there are countries where they've curbed some of that type of advertising to good effect.
Well, why doesn't the government buy some advertising and say this is bad for you?
I think the government has bought some advertising, particularly places like New York or even in Australia. They put these scary labels on foods and things like that. And so it's not clear what effect that has yet, though.
Jackie on Old Hammond Highway. Hi, Jackie. You're on with Dr. Himesfield.
Good morning. I have two questions, actually. Number one, diet sodas. I know so many people who drink diet sodas and think it's helping, but then I've also heard that diet sodas can make you want to have more sweet foods.
That's an idea that's been around for quite a while, that when you drink a diet soda, that the artificial sweeteners might promote some increase in food intake, but the evidence for that's very, very little. So if you drink water or you drink diet soda, the effects are about the same.
And Jackie, we'll make an exception for you. What's your second question?
The second part, and I'll take it off the air, is high fructose corn syrup and how that is affecting obesity.
Well, the high fructose corn syrup is in many soft drink sodas, and it's been studied very extensively, and it's clear it has a little different metabolic fate than ordinary sugar. But nevertheless, any sugar of any kind is not to be taken in excess.
297-5633. Still time to talk with Dr. Stephen Himesfield of the Pennington Center. Back in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Inkster Show at WRKF.org and 297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Dr. Stephen Himesfield, who is the former director of the Pennington Biomedical Research Center, a man who's worked all over the United States, has been a big executive with the pharmaceutical industry as well, and is considered, and I'm not exaggerating, to be perhaps the foremost expert on obesity in our world. Now, body mass index, you were one of the first to talk about this. You could take a 205-pound man like me. There's some 205-pounders who are fat. There's some who are in a lot better shape than I am, and then there's me. So there's a big difference, but depending sometimes, you just can't measure it on raw weight, can you?
Well, body mass index is weight adjusted for height, and that helps us look at fatness across people who have different weights and different heights. So the problem, if there is a problem with body mass index, is that it doesn't really tell you how much fat you have. So many people have a high BMI and might be classified as obese, but actually are muscular. It's not a common problem.
And the other way around, too.
And the other way around. There are many people who are normal weight but actually have a high body fat, and that's an increasingly recognized problem.
297-5633, Chris in New Roads. Chris, you're on the air with Dr. Stephen Himesfield.
Yes, doctor, thank you. I've been doing some research about different diets, Atkins and South Beach. I just wanted to get your comments on any of these diet trends.
The single most important thing is to stay on a diet, a healthy diet, and not to fall off of it. So these diets have all been studied many times together. And the single most important thing over time is if you stay on it, you lose weight and keep it off. But most people don't stay on those diets. So they all have different qualities. And as long as the foods are healthy in them, it's okay.
Have you ever been overweight?
I never have been overweight. No, I'm fortunate. I come from a relatively thin family.
So you're saying heredity is a factor as well.
Heredity is a very important factor. At least half or more, perhaps, of your weight is genetically determined.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
What do you do on a daily basis, though? Because you see people who are in their 30s and 40s, they may be fine, and then when they get a little older, you start getting the middle-aged paunch, and things get out of control.
Well, it's much easier to prevent it than to take it off and keep it off. So as you go forward in life, it would be a good idea to weigh yourself periodically and try and keep within
a certain
range.
But what do you do?
What do I do?
Yes.
I do weigh myself, and I do. One thing I learned managing obese patients is the technique of behavior modification, knowing what you're eating, planning ahead, creating a sort of a structure for what you're going to eat over a period of time.
Getting back to this BMI thing, you take an average man in the United States, I think, is about 5'9", although
yes,
men tend to lie about those things.
Uh-huh.
So a 5'9" man would weigh, on the average, the BMI range would be what?
Depending on your frame size, 5'9" would be about 170 or something like that, 170.
170.
Yeah.
But there are some football players who are 5'9" and maybe 220 and don't look like they're fat at all.
That's right. When I had a laboratory when I was at Columbia University, I used to get referrals of football players and basketball players, professional players, some of whom who had a body mass index way into the obesity range, but they had practically no body fat. And that was always a very enlightening experience.
Well, I've heard even elite athletes have like 5-6% body fat usually.
That's right.
Not everybody. When they say you got no body fat, everybody has some body fat.
No, I used to take care of the Knicks. Once a year I would see them.
The Knicks?
I would measure in the Knicks, and I would measure their body fat.
Yeah.
And some of them were not 5%. Some
really?
were a little higher, 15% or
15%?
So. Yes.
These are the New York Knicks.
Right, and then what would happen would be the coach would say, time for a little diet.
Is this Red Holtzman?
No. It was back about 10 or 15 years ago.
Well,
yeah.
The Knicks were my team when I was a kid. They won the world title May 8th, 1970, beat the Lakers in the seventh game at Madison Square Garden, 113-99.
Uh-huh. Well, most of them were, of course, extraordinarily in good condition. But during the off season, they can gain a little weight.
I don't think Walt Clyde Frazier, he didn't have 15% body fat. No way. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. And, J.C., you're going to have to let me know who's waiting in line. So we will go to the phone lines and visit more with Dr. Stephen Himesfield. Some folks thought you'd left town, but you're still here.
Oh,
you haven't gone anywhere.
I'm still here. I'm very busy. I have a lot of projects I'm working on, and we love living here.
Okay. Ben and Baker. Ben, good morning. You're on WRKF with Dr. Himesfield.
Yes, good morning. Doctor, you mentioned earlier that several states had signed up for that study, and I was wondering, and Louisiana not being included, was that because Louisiana did not choose to participate? And if that's the case, who made that decision? And also some of the poor states like Mississippi, were they included in the study?
Actually, I don't know the real reason that Louisiana wasn't included, but keep in mind this is 5 years ago it began. And, yes, some of the other states like Mississippi were included in this study. Texas was not in it. But it was random, the states that weren't included. And it's unfortunate that we weren't in there. But keep in mind that childhood obesity in Louisiana is among the highest in the nation. So it's a very important problem here.
297-5633, D on Jefferson Highway. D, good morning. You're on with Dr. Himesfield.
Hi, good morning, doctor.
Yes.
Good morning.
Oh, hello. Yes, I was calling to ask because it seems like, you know, we hear so many trends. Like before coconut, you know, the coconut products, they used to be banned. They were terrible for health. Now they're on, you know, everybody is on coconut diet now. And I was on another thing along the same lines as we were being told, like, you know, certain foods to avoid before, now they're becoming back in, like, the health craze. Like, how do you know which one to stick with? Like, what is the truth?
You know, here's my advice. And I think, you know, these sort of admonitions about different foods come and go. But I would go to the professional websites like eatright.org, which is the Dietetics Association, eatright.org, American Heart Association, American Diabetes Association. Go to those websites and you will see wonderful brief discussions on the appropriate foods to eat.
Thank you. Louise and Baker. Louise, good morning. You're on with Dr. Himesfield.
Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Okay, I have a question. What can be done to combat or minimize the effects of cortisone and the truncal obesity?
Well, first of all, for those who aren't familiar with this, cortisol is a hormone that's secreted by the adrenal gland, and in excess amounts, it can create a body shape that central fat and sort of a round face, a moon face, it's called. But most people don't have that hypercortisol condition. And if you do have truncal obesity, the best thing is to keep your weight down and exercise, and that'll minimize it to the extent possible.
Now, many men of my age get testosterone injections. That has a weight component to it. People who do that sort of thing generally weigh more as a result of it, don't they?
They do slightly. There's a small effect of that on keeping or even building muscle mass, but not a very large effect.
Well, is testosterone a good thing?
That's still being debated. There are risks associated with it. You have to be careful with your blood count, and there are some potential risks of developing prostate cancer and things like that. But it's still to be debated exactly whether or not it's a good thing for older men to take testosterone.
Well, a lot of younger men are taking it, too, as we see with these baseball players.
That's right. Now, that's a different thing. That's taking it for an anabolic effect, building muscle, and that definitely is a risky business.
But how risky?
Well, there are side effects, as I mentioned. For example, increasing blood count. You can also lose your job for doing it. So that's probably
really?
The biggest risk. Well,
you fail a drug test?
If you fail a drug test.
But I didn't know of anyone who failed a drug test because of testosterone.
No, but, You know, I think
now they might go into a rage because of testosterone and beat up their boss. That would usually cost you your job.
They could. But I think these kinds of drugs or hormones, they're often abused. And as you know, nature has a certain way of setting our hormone levels. And if you play mm-hmm. with that too much, you can have serious.
Do you take any supplements at all?
No, I don't take any supplements.
No. You don't? Do you take vitamins?
I eat healthy. I don't take vitamins.
No vitamins?
No.
You just eat healthy and you exercise regularly?
I do.
How regularly?
Every day that I can.
So what does that mean?
4 days a week, maybe 5 days a week.
Walking, running?
I swim.
Swim. Which is a great exercise.
It's great, and it has the least damage to my joints. I did a lot of sports when I was young. I was a very competitive athlete, and as a result, I have a couple of aching joints that I try and keep off of them.
You were an athlete in your day?
Yes. I was. I had college athletic scholarships. I was very competitive. I love sports.
In which sports?
I was in gymnastics.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's
another tumbling.
Tumbling.
Yeah. That's why the joints hurt a little
Let's
bit.
Let's go
now.
To the video, JC, and see Dr. Himesfield tumbling.
Yeah.
I bet you could still tumble.
A little bit. I did it pretty much into my 40s and 50s.
297-5633 is your number. Now, the obesity problem, it's not just whether or not a person looks better when they don't weigh a lot, but this causes significant issues regarding glucose and diabetes, type 2 diabetes. And once you go in that area, it's a danger zone.
Well, it is. And that, of course, is why people are so concerned about obesity is the core problem in what is becoming an increasing epidemic of chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, diabetes. All of these tie together with obesity.
And type 2 diabetes is gone off the chart, right?
10 to 12% of Americans have type 2 diabetes.
Only 10 to 12%.
Only 10.
I bet it's higher in Louisiana.
We lead the nation. We're in the top five for diabetes. And as you know, once you have diabetes, your risk of heart disease and other conditions, amputations and so on, is increased very substantially.
Trevor on Acadian. Trevor, you're on WRKF with Dr. Stephen Himesfield.
Morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering if the doctor could comment on the usage of BMI to measure individual obesity rates when it was really generated to measure populational rates. I mean, I'm a power lifter. I am considered obese based on my BMI, even when my body fat percentage gets down below 20%. And that can, you know, influence things like insurance rates and stuff like that. I want to know what the doctor had to say about that.
Wait a minute, Trevor. How tall are you?
5'10".
5'10", and what do you weigh?
About 235.
235. Okay, and he says his body fat's like at 20% or a little less. Well, that's about where I am, and really you ought to be at about 15%, shouldn't you?
Yeah, well, 15% would be a 20-year-old man in great physical shape. So, Nick, a New Yorker.
No, but I bet you're at 15%.
Probably 15 to 20, and age has a big effect on it also. But I think if you're interested, the other thing to do is a waist circumference. So mm-hmm. bodybuilders tend to have high BMIs, body mass index, but their waists are normal.
Okay.
So if you get a tape measure, get a tape measure out.
And measure your chest and measure your waist.
Mainly the waist, and you can go to web and you'll see normal waist circumference levels and see how high you are.
So the chest is irrelevant?
Not too relevant for public health.
Well, this guy, Trevor, who's a power lifter, he's probably at 5'10", 235, he probably has a waist that is 38 inches, but his chest may be 48 inches.
It could be, but what you see is if you take a weightlifter and an obese person with the same body mass index, the weightlifter will have a smaller waist circumference.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay. We're going to segue in just a bit to talk about Edwin Washington Edwards and his 86th birthday. He just became a father 5 days ago for the fourth time, 64-year gap between child one and child four. Dr. Martin Hugh Jones, my good friend, the anthrax expert at LSU, He says it's not good for an 86-year-old man to father a child because he says an 86-year-old man's biology is such that the kid could have some problems. Is Dr. Martin Hugh Jones on target, or is he off his rocker?
Well, I think the risk of congenital birth defects and other things like that does go up in men a little bit as they get older and fathering children. Of course, that risk is much greater in women.
And there are different types of 86-year-old men, too.
There are, and I think this issue is tremendously important because the population's aging, and there was a time, if you go back 100 years ago, the lifespan was 50 for the average American. Today it is almost 80, and so we're going to see more and more older people doing things that are typical of younger people.
Well, Edwin may not be through. We'll talk with Leo. I was a bit surprised this child was not named Leo, but it's Eli Wallace Edwards, 86 years old. And no matter how you cut it, that's remarkable for a man of his age to be fathering children.
It is, but not unprecedented. And I do have some colleagues who are in that age group and who have very young children.
Very young children.
Yes.
And I think the Guinness record is 94.
94. That would be challenging.
But as we get older and those people who take care of themselves, they tend to be able to do things that previous 94-year-olds could not.
That's so true. And I think you have to avoid two epidemics. One is the Alzheimer's disease epidemic, and the other is what's called sarcopenia, muscle loss epidemic. You have to skirt those two.
Why has Alzheimer's, and I know Pennington is doing a big study on this right now, why has Alzheimer's become such a factor for people of 70, 80, 90 years old or younger?
Yes, well, we do have an excellent program at Pennington, but the reason is because the population is simply aging. There are people now living well into their 80s and 90s who 100 years ago wouldn't have. When I was a medical student, Alzheimer's was a rare disease. Today, everyone knows someone with Alzheimer's disease. So aging population, and we're just beginning to understand the underlying basis for Alzheimer's.
What are some of the things going on right now at the Pennington Center regarding Alzheimer's and obesity and other health things that you do out there?
Well, we have a major program there, the Institute for Dementia Research and Prevention, and they have many clinical trials, ongoing longitudinal studies. Very important opportunity for people, particularly older people, to get enrolled in these programs that ultimately will tell us about diet, exercise, and other factors that lead to Alzheimer's disease.
Well, next time we have you, we'll talk more. We had a listener who wanted you to talk about anorexia and bulimia, and I know you've done studies on that as well. But the guy asks, Charles asked, Mike Mosley's popular book, The Fast Diet?
Yes.
Are you familiar with this?
I'm not so familiar with it, but I do know that there are 10 million Americans with anorexia nervosa, mostly women, horrible disease, very important to get treated.
Well, Dr. Himesfield, let's do this again. You're fun to work with, and congrats on your work at Pennington, and we're glad you've stayed in Baton Rouge.
I enjoyed it, Jim. Thanks
we'll be
very
back
much.
Soon, I hope, with Dr. Himesfield, and we'll be back in 90 seconds with Leo Honeycutt. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, and today is August 7th, 2013, and it was on this date in 1927 that Edwin Washington Edwards was born in Marksville, and he is 86 years old today, 5 days after his wife Trina, age 34, gave birth to Eli Wallace Edwards, another EWE. Yesterday, Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network talked with the Cajun Prince, Edwin Washington Edwards, and here's how Edwin sounded about becoming a father at 86 or 85.
I feel good. I don't have any complaints. And although most people at my age are looking for a nursing home rather than a nursery, I'm very happy that my new baby is going to give me a renewed vigor and interest in life.
Now, Eli Wallace Edwards is Edwin Edwards. I misspoke. Actually, it's his fifth child and Trina's third child. And this couple just celebrated their two-year wedding anniversary on July 29th. The governor says his wife is a loving mother of little Eli.
And really wants to do it all herself. So I'm going to let her do it, but I'm here. I'm with her all the time and always willing and able to do whatever she wishes me to do to help care for the baby.
And this saga will be played out on national television in the reality show The Governor's Wife, and Edwin Edwards has been an active participant in The Governor's Wife, starring Trina Edwards, and he's very proud of the newborn Eli Wallace Edwards.
I feel at my age, I'm semi-retired, and I now realize more than ever the value of life and the happiness that this baby has brought to me, and I'm loving it.
Now, in studio is Leo Honeycutt, the biographer of Edwin Washington Edwards.
He loves it.
He's basking in the sunshine.
Well, you know, to sort of play off what your last guest was talking about, you know, how does this guy do this at 86 years old? He turns 86 today, and he's the healthiest 86-year-old that I know. How did he do it? Well, he didn't drink, and he didn't smoke, just for starters. He did some light workouts. He enjoyed tennis back in the 1970s. But by and large, the real key that I found after having worked with him for all these years on that book is that he never really held a grudge. Now, there were some people who got under his skin, but he never held a grudge. And, I mean, let's face it, how much criticism do you think he got in 16 years as governor?
You don't think he held a grudge against Frank Palazzola?
I think that he probably remembered that quite well, but he makes himself not hold grudges. I mean, what good would that do anyway?
Yeah, but intellectually we can rationalize not holding grudges, but quite often we humans do.
Well, I think that a lot of that got, as far as he's concerned, got ameliorated to an extent with the book. I think that he was satisfied.
You saved his life, Leo.
No.
No, I'm serious. I'm not being facetious here. I think that book did give Edwin Edwards new life, and if it were not for the book, he would not have met Trina.
Right.
And Trina would not have given birth 5 days ago to his fifth child, Eli Wallace.
Well, Edwards. That may, you know, who knows? Who knows what would have happened if the book had not been written? But I think that the book was necessary for us to understand, for people who really like to study politics and like to know what's going to happen with this state, why it is the way it is, and where it's going. I mean, you know, that book was just listed as one of the top 25 books by Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden.
I think one of the top 10.
Well, okay, top 10, whatever. But, you know, if you really want to understand the state, it might be a good idea to read the book. Now, it is thick, and I get complaints all the time. It's just too big.
Well, you get a workout.
You know,
you get one of John Foles' cookbooks in one hand and your biography in the other. And, I mean, you don't have to go to the gym.
That's true. That may be true. It is chock full of information. But, you know, let this be a consolation. It is only one-third of what the original draft was. So at 1,800 pages and 3,000 footnotes, I knew good and well people were going to read that.
And where are those pages? Did you just throw them in the trash?
Oh, no.
No?
No, we still have I still have the balance of it.
Are they in a hermetically sealed envelope? Where are they?
They are in a safe deposit box in an unnamed bank here in town.
Really? So those pages have great value.
Those pages are, if anything happens to me, the police will go straight to that safe deposit box.
The deduct box. Leo Honeycutt, a man who spent most of his career as a journalist in television, and talked a lot about Edwin Edwards through the years, interviewed him on occasion. When's the first time you ever interviewed him?
I can't remember the first time that I interviewed him, but I did take pictures of him when I was a freshman at Northeast University up in Monroe, which is now ULM. But I remember that I was like 17, and he came to it was my first semester in college, and he came to a football game, but he came there to dedicate an alumni center, he and Elaine both. And so I was assigned to cover them that day and into that night. So I was shooting pictures of him all day. And I remember the very first time he walked into a room, I thought, this is the governor? He was so short. I was surprised at how short he was.
I'm sure he's happy to hear you say that.
Well, but here's the balance of it, though. Mm-hmm. He walks into a room and takes over. And he doesn't have to say a word. Mm-hmm. Now, that is charisma.
And he rarely smiles.
He was sort of self-conscious up until about the first or second term because he had a wide gap between his two front teeth, which he had fixed. But up until then, I mean, he had a David Letterman smile, so he was self-conscious about that, and he never would really smile.
He had that poker face, though, where you never knew what he was really thinking.
That's true.
I still don't know what he's thinking.
Well, and you know, well, obviously he's very, I mean, we just heard what he said in the interview. He's very grateful for having succeeded at what he did and having, on balance, having a pretty good life, especially for somebody who's 86 today.
Well, I don't know of anybody who's had the kind of life he has had. 4 terms as governor. He was a congressman. He was a state lawmaker. He was a city councilman. As he once said on this show, he was on the ballot 26 times in his career, and he ran first, including primaries, 25 out of 26 times. The only rascal to ever beat him was Buddy Romer. And for a while, when you would mention Buddy Romer, he would bristle. But now it seems he's even mellowed when it comes to Charles Elson Romer III.
Well, and, you know, once again, mellowing probably produces some longevity. I mean, it is a certain talk about quantity of life. In fact, there's an article in The Advocate about that today on page 9. But what's the quality of life? I mean, the quality of life is what we probably need to be more mm-hmm. concerned about. Is, are you really living the life that you want to live? When I was doing the Jerry Lane book, Jerry said that at one point, here's a guy that when he died was worth about $500 million. And he had done quite well for himself. But he asked his mother one time, you know, if you could live your life over again, what would you do differently? And she said, I wouldn't want to live my life over again, period. And he said, you can't feel that. You can't really feel that way. She said, yes, I do. So there is a certain will that's involved in all this, a will to live and a will to want to keep doing what you're doing.
297-5633 for Leo Honeycutt, Inkster Show at WRKF.org as well. Now, Edwin Edwards came out of prison a heavier man. Most people, when they go to prison, they get slimmer. Billy Cannon did, for example. Edwin looked like they were feeding him pretty well in Oakdale.
Well, I think those last few weeks before he, you know, got out, I think he didn't walk as much as what he historically had done for the 8 years that he'd been there.
But he's mildly obese, mildly. He needs to lose a few pounds, and especially at his age, and especially if he's going to break that Guinness record for fathering a child at 94, he needs to slim down just a bit. But
I think he's holding the Guinness Book of World Records as of today for having the most years between his oldest and youngest child, 63 years.
A little over 63. I think it's almost 64.
But, oh, it is?
Yeah, I think okay. So. Yeah, so... that to put it in perspective, I think his oldest child is
Anna,
who was born in
1950.
No, well, it'd be 19
or 51.
49, I guess. 49.
Oh, was it 49?
Well, 49.
I need to go back and read my book.
Maybe 1950. Yes, you're probably right. 1950. So 1950 to 2013. That's quite a span.
Quite a spread.
Yeah, well, many people don't live 63 years, much less fathering children from day one to day.
Right.
How many days between Anna and Eli? How do his kids feel about this? Do they feel like this is a great thing, or do they say, well, what's dad doing?
Well,
what does
he
think?
It's like a why not. I think that they did have some trouble with it in the beginning, but they pretty much have embraced the situation. I mean, what else are you going to do? You mean you're going to not talk to your father? Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people do that, and that's not any fun.
When you see these two together, it's apparent that there is great affection between Trina.
Yeah, and, I mean, and I have to admit, you know, I had to be convinced too, but I was around him enough to see it, and I think she really does care about him. Now, how this reality show is going to work out, I don't know.
Well, you know, Trina is a few years older than your beautiful daughter, Danielle. If some 85-year-old convicted felon started courting Danielle, I imagine Leo would have some issues with that.
Well, I probably would. I might clean off the shotgun, but no, I'm, you know.
I hope
you're kidding.
I
mean, she is 31, and she is an adult, and she can make her own decisions, and she does.
But Trina, just to show you how much of sway she has on a man who arguably is the most powerful person in this state since Huey Long, she even got him to go to a Madonna concert.
Yes. She can get him to do a lot of things, you know, and she does insist, and he does just suck it up and go.
How did he like Madonna?
Well, I mean, you know, it's out of his generation, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there any chance that President Obama will pardon him or that the next president? Because if he gets a pardon, he can run again.
Yes, he could run, but would he run? No.
He would not?
Mm-mm. No, he's got too much on his plate right now for somebody who just wants to kind of take it easy. You know, in fact, he's told me before, Leo, I gave over 50 years, more than half my life to public service. Why do I want to keep doing it?
And look what it got him.
Right.
8.5 years in jail.
Right.
That is, you have been kind enough to come with him and to arrange the interviews we had with him over the last several years, and hopefully there will be another one soon with Edwin Edwards. But the fact that he has spent 1 out of every 10 days in his life in jail and comes out and rules the world as only he can, it's a remarkable testament to the triumph of his spirit.
Exactly right, and I think we could all learn from that. Now, does he have detractors? Of course, and he always will, but everybody who's ever done anything has detractors. Anybody, I mean, even, I can remember doing the research and reading back in the late 60s, early 70s, the most admired man, there used to be a list mm-hmm. that the New York Times would put out every year, the most admired man in America always, after about 1968 or 69, was Richard Nixon. And so he headed that list right up until 1974 when he resigned.
Yeah, and so then he kind of went down.
Well, yeah, and you know, and so we now know what was happening behind the scenes, and the awful, really sorry thing that you know, we all had to live through was Watergate.
Yeah,
and Watergate was not a very good legacy, obviously, for him. But if he just mm-hmm. hadn't held that grudge from the 1950s against those Democrats who tried to get him ousted, then, you know, Watergate wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened. He would have gone out as one of the best presidents in history. But my point is that Edwin Edwards pretty much laid everything out on the table every year.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nixon, who had been vice president 8 years and elected president twice, in fact, he and FDR are the only ones to win 4 national elections, he was 61 years old when he resigned. That's all he was after all that.
Well, it sure seems young now, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 61 years old when he resigned on August 9th, 1974. We're coming up on 39 years in a few days. And he died at 81. Mm. Now, Edwin Edwards is 86, and Eli Wallace Edwards, I guess if he graduates at 18, like most kids do, from, let's say, 17, then his right. dad will be 103 yeah. when he graduates from high school. What are the odds?
Well, you know, it's like that article said this morning about the longevity and how that longevity has increased since 1900 from like mm-hmm. 46 and a half. Now we're up to like 73, 74. So we've almost doubled the longevity of our of what we can expect to live. But, you know, but the question was, how long do you really want to live? And the article mentioned that most people said, I'd like to see 90, but not much past that.
Well, this kid, I would think, is destined for a life in politics. He even has the EWE initials.
Well, it just ensures that the saga will continue.
And his life will be followed quite earnestly from day one. Was the camera crew there at Woman's Hospital when Trina
no.
had the baby? No?
There was a still camera, but there was not a camera crew.
But it'll be in the governor's wife, right?
I think Brian Pavlich was there.
Were you,
yeah, I think he's like the family photographer or something.
Would you like to, are you eagerly anticipating the governor's wife?
The reality show?
Yes.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been shooting this thing now for going on 2 years.
I know.
I'd hate to be the editor, I can tell you that.
Well, it's almost like editing your book.
Well, okay. All right, touche. You're right. That did yeah. take me 2 years to chop, yeah.
Well, and how many years did you work on that project?
Five.
And that's why, you know, people behind your back, Leo, they say, Leo made a fortune off that book. Well, I said, well, he should make a fortune. It took him 5 years.
Well,
5 years of your life was spent on that book. So you
yeah,
have
virtually
to,
7 days a week.
You have to factor in whatever you've earned
but
and divide
let's be,
it by
let's
five.
Let's be clear on this. It did not make me rich.
You were
it made
already
me
rich.
Rich in knowledge,
yes.
Rich in spirit, but not rich in wealth.
And it's made you one of the, we just had Dr. Himesfield on, the foremost obesity person in the world, and now I think we have the foremost Louisiana historian in studio in Leo Hunter.
Well, you know, you got John McGinnis and a number of other people, T. Harry Williams.
T. Harry is dead, And John knows the last 40 years, I think, better than anybody else. But when you go back and what you had to do from really from Huey Long to the present, I don't know of anybody who knows more than this man.
Well, Leo Honecker. Wanted to understand. I just wanted to understand how we got to where we are without, you know, peeling back all the rhetoric and all the acrimony. And because everybody stays pretty mad at politicians.
Well, tomorrow on this show, we'll have John Hill, the journalist who Edwin Edwards once said was a liar and an ass. Now, John Hill has become quite an activist, and we'll find out why tomorrow on this show. Until then, for Leo Honeycutt, J.C. Kane, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.